America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day it is. The government is going to be able to operate for another week. Yippee! President Biden today signed a bill that passed overwhelmingly to avoid a government shutdown. So that's good news. But there's more good news. There is good news that actually shows that the conventional wisdom on Joe Biden and his problems with immigration, the conventional wisdom is wrong. Why? Because actually the idea that somehow immigration is going to be the decisive issue that settles this election doesn't appear to be accurate. We will get to that. We'll be discussing the dueling immigration visits yesterday. We'll be talking about that with Ruben Navarrete, who has spent a lifetime following both immigration and the law enforcement used to try to keep the immigration legal. His father, Ruben's father, was a police officer in San Diego for many, many, many years. Ruben will be joining us a little bit later in the show. Meanwhile, there are two key hearings today. This, according to CNN, one is going on in Florida and one is going on in Georgia. They could both hold significant implications for Donald Trump and the criminal charges he faces for his actions around the 2020 election and in retaining classified information after leaving office. Trump is the first former U.S. president to face criminal charges, and with his third presidential bid not only underway, but moving forward, the stakes are high. The judge is hearing final arguments right now on whether Fulton County District Attorney Fawny Willis should be removed from the Georgia election subversion case. Trump and his co-defendants in that case allege that Willis had a romantic relationship, which she clearly did, with the prosecutor she hired to lead the case, whether that created a conflict of interest that should disqualify her. Meanwhile, in Florida, there is a federal judge who did not set a new trial date for the classified documents case during the morning portion of the hearing. The trial is currently set for May, and the special counsel's team is requesting a July 8th start date. Now, all of this is delay, 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 delay. That greatly helps President Trump because it means that they are almost surely not going to get a final settlement of his various cases before the election. And what can happen? Well, after the election, and this becomes incredibly complicated, if President Trump is elected on November 5th in November, he will not yet have the authority to give orders. He's president-elect. So what happens to suspending his various prosecutions? This is extraordinarily complicated. Trump is attending the hearing in person. This is the hearing in Florida, which is nearby to one of the many places Trump lives. Federal judge has not yet set a new trial date for the classified documents. Trump is proposing an August 12th start date. Trump is attending the hearing in person. There are no cameras in court. The judge could rule on a trial date from the bench this afternoon. If there's any breaking news here, we will bring that news to you. Also, speaking of breaking news, President Biden signed today the stopgap bill, signed it into law to avert a partial government shutdown at the end of the week. The end of the week is now, basically. They would have had the partial government shutdown starting at midnight tonight, but no, President Biden has signed a bill. The margins for passing that legislation and keeping the government operating, 77-13 in the Senate, and just basically a handful of Republicans who were voting no. And then in the House of Representatives, the Republicans were more split, but it was still overwhelming because of Democratic support. The House voted in the afternoon, yesterday afternoon, 320-99. So that's pretty overwhelming. That's more than 75% of the House voting to pass the legislation. The legislation pushes the funding deadline to March 8th for several agencies, including the Department of Veterans Affairs, Transportation, Energy, Agriculture, Interior, Housing and Urban Development, as well as the Environmental Protection Agency. Financing for most of those agencies was set to expire Saturday, just after midnight. So, again, that's midnight tonight. No, it's going to go on until March 8th. Funding for the rest of the federal government under the bill expires March 22nd now, 2 weeks later than under current law. The measure now heads to President Biden's desk for signature. He has signed it. To provide additional time for full-year funding bills to be finalized and passed, the stopgap measure will extend funding on a short-term basis and set up two deadlines again. The new deadlines on March 8th, it's a week from now, and March 22nd. Meanwhile, the United States has announced that it will begin airdropping food aid to people of Gaza. President Biden announced today, as the humanitarian crisis deepens and Israel continues to resist opening additional land crossings to allow more assistance into the war-torn strip. The reason they're not allowing additional land crossings is because those crossings in the past were used for Hamas, which insists that it is, quote, winning the war, for Hamas to break through and attack Israel and attack the people in southern Israel who suffered so horribly with the attack of October 7th. Speaking in the Oval Office, Biden said the U.S. would be pulling out every stop to get additional aid into Gaza, which has been under heavy bombardment by Israel since the October 7th Hamas terror attacks. Biden said the aid was not flowing into Gaza quickly enough. That aid has been flowing in from Egypt and the crossing, which is in southern Gaza near Rafah, which is sort of the center of what is left of Hamas. Biden said that he was going to be going, he was working to broker an immediate ceasefire deal. That was what he was talking about when he was eating his ice cream with Seth Meyers. There will be an immediate ceasefire deal, he says, that will allow additional aid in. May that be appropriate. There's also a piece in the Wall Street Journal by Alex Castellanos, who is a veteran Republican operative. He says that the Republicans are a party in search of a future, but the Democrats, he believes, are actually linked destructively and suicidally to the past. Biden is going to be holding a bilateral meeting today at with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of Italy. She has been a strong supporter of aid to Ukraine, which continues to be controversial in the U.S. Congress. The next on that, on Alexei Navalny's funeral and much more, all coming up on The Michael Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved show, I mentioned that there is all kinds of good news to share today. At least it seems to me it is very clearly good news. The good news from No Labels is no labels. I do not believe that it will help the country to have multiple third and fourth and fifth party candidates for president. I mean, I think Cornel West and Robert Kennedy Jr., and who knows, Marianne Williamson, who is now, I guess she was listening to different crystals speaking to her. She's back in the race. She is. She actually finished ahead of Dean Phillips. She finished third in the Michigan primary. This for the Democratic nomination for president. The Michigan primary, where the second place finisher was none of the above. Again, people wanting to show their dissatisfaction with President Biden and his handling of the Middle East. But there is this item, and it's actually could be the most important political item of the day, really. The report from Wall Street Journal, just breaking, No Labels, the centrist political group that has spent months weighing a possible unity presidential ticket, that's unity in quotes, said it will make a decision next week on whether to push ahead with the effort. Democrats have assailed No Labels, saying the organization would hurt President Biden's ability to win re-election and could greatly help former President Donald Trump, the likely Republican nominee, recapture the White House in a crowded field of candidates. No Labels has said for months that our movement plans to regroup shortly after Super Tuesday to evaluate the status of our 2024 project, and that remains the plan. That said, so said Ryan Clancy, who is the group's chief strategist. The group doesn't do anything. So what does it mean to be a chief strategist of a group that hasn't even figured out whether they're going to be a factor in this election or not? My hope is they won't be, because it could only be a negative factor, frankly. On March 8th, said Ryan Clancy, we will gather our 800 delegates from all 50 states, I'm sure that'll be fun, who would ultimately approve a final unity ticket to discuss the path forward. The plans were earlier reported by New York Magazine's Intelligencer. No Labels has signaled that it would likely push for an independent ticket composed of a Democrat and a Republican if Biden and Trump become their party nominees. The group has cited polls showing interest among the public in additional options. I actually believe that they are so far from coalescing around any charismatic or well-known figure that if No Labels goes forward, they may issue a statement of principles, they may issue plans for the future, but does anyone really believe that if they're getting together on March 8th, a week from now, they're going to be ready to, quote, nominate a new candidate for president? And who would it be? They had been interested at one point in Larry Hogan, they had been interested in Joe Manchin, they had been interested in all sorts of people. Justin Amash was one of the people who was talking. He was a former Libertarian member of Congress, former Republican member of Congress. He is also Arab American, and he has a point of view that is very different from that of either Trump or Biden, and far less supportive of Israel. In fact, not at all supportive of Israel. But that's another story. He's now announcing he's running for U.S. Senate, and apparently running for U.S. Senate as a Republican in a crowded field up in Michigan. Meanwhile, there is this horrible story about the stampede that occurred for desperate and hungry people in Gaza, who then rushed where they were bringing out the food. And this is a point of view, a perspective that is provided by Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner of the Israel Defense Forces on CNN, talking about this story from the war in Gaza. This is clip 1A.
I'm not aware of so many people receiving any gunshot wounds. And I would say we need to be very, very cautious at accepting anything that comes out of the Hamas Ministry of Health, as we would be cautious of accepting anything coming out of the ISIS Ministry of Health or the Al-Qaeda Ministry of Health. The reality is this, in a humanitarian operation in the early hours of yesterday morning, on the fourth consecutive day, we are conducting an operation to get humanitarian aid and food supplies into northern Gaza. As the food supplies proceeded into the northern Gaza Strip, masses of people stormed the convoy of over 30 trucks. As you can see in the footage, the amount of people that just went to the trucks, it was immense and extensive. And what we understand is that throughout the case of these actions, many people were trampled, beaten, and in some cases even run over. We understand that dozens of people were actually run over and killed in this incident.
And then he gave further details of what happened.
Right. Indeed, the IDF were securing the area, and we had a threat to one of our tanks where people were advancing towards the tank. The forces opened fire with light arms machine gun with warning shots. Those warning shots, as the people continued to move forward, continuing to the perceived threat, continued to a limited control burst of fire. And this is the images that we've seen come out. And then the forces then retreated. So it was a very limited, contained engagement on the ground. And most of the casualties and fatalities are absolutely from the initial incident of storming the convoy. This is the tragedy. This is the tragedy of this event, and indeed another desperate situation as a result of this war.
And there is more discussion about what actually happened, but the notion that this was somehow some kind of massacre. Look, there are so many sources about the lengths to which the Israeli Defense Forces have tried to go to minimize civilian casualties, at the same time that there's documentation that Hamas is trying to maximize civilian casualties because they believe that that is their only way of influencing world opinion. Meanwhile, there are divisions in the Democratic Party on this issue that are profound. And on the issue of immigration. We'll get to it on the MedVed Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, there is some news from Nikki Haley. She is still campaigning enthusiastically and raising a great deal of money for getting ready for Super Tuesday, which is coming up. Well, it's the next Tuesday we have. It's going to be a super one because it's going to be some 16 different primary contests all around the country. One-third of all the Republican delegates are going to be chosen on next Tuesday. And there had been all kinds of discussion about Nikki Haley basically abandoning her drive for the Republican nomination. It is unlikely, it seems, at the moment, unless something extraordinary happens to President Trump and his presidential bid, Haley is very unlikely to win right now. Trump officially right now has 110 delegates. Nikki Haley has won 20 delegates. There would have to be a very dramatic turnaround next week for her to win the nomination. But she is hanging on. There are 1,215 delegates who are needed for the nomination. Again, a third of those delegates, some 400, are going to be chosen for during Super Tuesday. In any event, she has spoken to Axios, Nikki Haley, and she has completely ruled out a no-labels bid for president. That was one of the many, many, many different rumors that had been circulating everywhere about different prominent people who aren't named Trump and aren't named Biden who might take up this no-labels banner. Part of the reason it's so futile is because they don't have a position on the ballot in most states. I believe that No Labels right now has 11 states where it can put somebody on the ballot, which makes it very, very unlikely that they could impact the election other than taking votes away from somebody else. And it's who that somebody else would be is completely unclear since we have no idea who No Labels would be running. In any event, she, Nikki Haley, is the only Republican still challenging former President Trump for the party's nomination. And with her prospects dimming with each primary, there was some speculation she'd try a third party bid. That's what Axios is reporting. Not so, she said today in a roundtable with journalists. She said, if I were to do No Labels, that would require a Democrat vice president. I can't do what I want to do as president with a Democrat vice president. And I'm not sure what she means. There are many presidencies where the vice president is almost totally irrelevant. You don't hear about them. They don't do anything. They're nobodies. Dare I mention Kamala Harris? I mean, does anyone know what her actual role is? Yeah, right. So she's supposed to be in charge of border security. That's gone well. Big picture, says Axios, Haley has repeatedly said that she's focused on next week's Super Tuesday contest when 15 states and American Samoa will be holding their contests. This is what one of the most recent Nikki Haley ads sounds like. It talks about the Republican Party with a hole in our ship. Listen.
We are in a ship with a hole in it. That hole is Donald Trump. We can ignore the hole all we want, and we'll go down with the ship. Or we can go and see this for what it is, and understand if we go in a new direction, that we can save ourselves. And that's where this all comes down, is we have to know that we can be part of the solution. We have to know that America is better than what we have right now. We have to know that we have to be part of how that's going to happen. So if you join our movement, this is my promise to you, and you get everybody you know to join it with us. And I promise you, our best days are yet to come. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure that the idea of a hole in the ship, because is Mr. better to say that Donald Trump is an iceberg? But at least this way she gets to call him a hole. I mean, which is not perhaps one of the most rhetorically brilliant steps that a candidate could take. and a hole basically leaks steadily. It takes a while. This is much more like an explosion. There is a piece that Alex Castellanos wrote for the Wall Street Journal, and it really is about the decline of both parties, but he's particularly brutal, just brutal, on Joe Biden. And he begins a column by saying, it's been more than three decades since Joe Biden passed out in a New York hotel and remained unconscious for several hours. He endured two brain surgeries to repair the silent ravages of twin aneurysms, or ballooning of arteries, one of which had ruptured. After 6 months of recovery, Mr. Biden returned to the only life he knows. He won't let his health remove him from public life again. Mr. Biden's personal decline has exploded into an irremediable public embarrassment, writes Castellanos. 9 months before the election, an ABC News Ipsos poll reports that 86% of Americans, including 73% of Democrats and 91% of independents, believe that Mr. Biden is too old to hold his office. Time doesn't improve old age. As the world slips beyond his understanding, we hear of Mr. Biden's blow-ups. Anger and aggression characterize his responses, publicly and inside the White House. The rate of Mr. Biden's decline can only accelerate, and so can its cost, writes Alex Castellanos. Voters can tolerate a president dismissed by a special prosecutor as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory, unquote. But a commander-in-chief with his finger on the nuclear trigger who can't control his belligerence would no doubt terrify them. Power doesn't often age gracefully. It clings and expires in a labored rush, he writes, devoured by another generation, hungry for its time in the sun. Washington can't long remain a country for old men. Democrats will either replace Mr. Biden in a putsch at their convention in August, or voters will likely do so in November. In either case, the Democratic Party will soon present the country with what America craves: a generational change in leadership. And that would be the case with Democrats losing to Trump, then who will be leading the Democratic Party? One of the questions on the table. More answers coming up on The Medved Show.
I'm, of course, deeply honored to receive
The Michael Medved Show. More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, Alexei Navalny was buried, and there was a tremendous crowd, which people not fully expected, and they chanted during the funeral for the heroic Russian dissident, and somebody who gave his life to try to stop Vladimir Putin's attack on democracy and the sovereignty of Ukraine in particular. Crowds chanted, Putin is a killer, as reported here. This is clip 9.
Putin убийца! Путин убийца!
That's Putin is a killer. Putin is a killer. CNN spoke with someone who was making his way to pay respects to the great leader of the opposition, Alexei Navalny.
Why have you come here today with so many other Russians to pay your respects?
I guess it's a symbolic value for people who don't agree with everything that's happening in Russia.
Right.
I can't be specific because we can say, like, right, the bad words, you know?
It's risky for you to be here.
Yeah, it's certainly risky.
So why take the
risk? You see, because that's my stance on things. And I believe that's to show solidarity, that you are not the one who has to deal with this.
He's showing solidarity with, he said, Navalny and his family. CNN also spoke with a woman who turned out to be too timid to talk on camera. And you can hear her self-censoring herself as she's about to say the word war. Listen, clip 12.
Country, I would say Russia. That it united some people, but at the same time, it's quite sad. It's obviously horribly sad. It upsets me, obviously, and other people here in this group. But I think it's kind of a uniting thing, since a lot of people came here to pay their last goodbyes.
Sure, but what does it say about your country, about Russia, the state of it?
There are obviously some people who are, against the whole thing that's happening right now. I can't say it, obviously. But there are some people who have good hearts, basically, I feel like.
Right, people have good hearts who are against the thing. The thing is called genocidal war, which is what Putin had launched against Ukraine. At Navalny's request, there was a song played at his funeral. Here are the first couple of lyrics to a song you may recognize. It's clip 13.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived.
And again, yes, Navalny lived and died his way. And he was also buried along with a soundtrack from his favorite movie, which was Terminator 2. This is the song that plays in the film when Arnold Schwarzenegger sinks into the vat of molten metal and gives a thumbs up at the end of the film. The music, clip 14. I think this will mean something to the real Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has been very outspoken in expressing his sympathy for the fight for freedom in Ukraine. Representative Adam Smith, who's been a guest on this show on many occasions, he is a pro-defense, pro-national security, aid to Ukraine, moderate Democrat. And Adam Smith was speaking during the Lloyd Austin hearing about his hospitalization and talking about what he believes is more important, which is sending $60 billion to Ukraine. Here is Representative Adam Smith of Washington State speaking during the Lloyd Austin hearing, clip 6.
One of the things I want to emphasize as this hearing goes forward is not to use this to the advantage of our adversaries, to use it as a partisan attack. There was nothing embarrassing about what happened here. There was nothing that makes us appear weak. The United States, as all of this was going on, as has been pointed out, was carrying out strikes against our adversary in order to protect our force. We were doing everything that we needed to do to meet the national security needs of this country. And if members of this committee incorrectly imply otherwise, they are merely giving aid and comfort to those adversaries that they claim to care about confronting. And I will also one more time emphasize that if we care about confronting our adversaries, rather than nitpicking the Secretary of Defense about his precise process in this situation, we should go ahead and pass the National Security Supplemental that the Senate has passed with 70 bipartisan votes to precisely meet those national security needs. Whatever Russia and Chinese propaganda machines may be cranking out about this situation, I assure you it pales in comparison to what they're cranking out about the fact that they think the United States is getting ready to abandon our ally in Ukraine.
And that, it seems to me, is profoundly and properly true, and good for you, Representative Smith. The issue of Ukraine, which continues being put off by the Congress, even while they are avoiding a government shutdown, that's good, that's positive. But there is this question that Alex Castellanos puts about the future of the Republican Party. I've shared with you his harsh words about Biden and the difficulties that Democrats face. And he then writes, this would be a great moment for the Republican Party because of the confusion on the Democratic side to offer our vision of the future. If only we had either a vision or a Republican Party, we have neither. Can anyone name a GOP leader whose vision appeals beyond the party's base and inspires Americans to come together for a greater purpose? Can we name a national Republican figure who does more than rage against the dying light Democrats offer today? Can we identify a nationally known conservative leader with sufficient confidence in Republican principles to believe our party's ideals can appeal to all voters and attract minorities, young people, and yes, even college-educated women? It can be done, he writes. Ronald Reagan did it. Where is our Reagan today? In 2016, Donald Trump stuck a wrench in the machinery of the tired, old, self-serving political establishment. For the good of the country, he believes that that changed the Republican Party. But he brings out, Mr. Biden's beliefs are old. Mr. Trump can't be imitated. Neither is capable of building what comes next. The next generation of Democrats is coming, hiding their antiquated socialism behind fresh faces. Only the next generation of Republicans can beat them. What Reagan did in his time for his Republican Party, a fearless new generation of Republicans must do for ours. Renew the old GOP. That is Alex from Alex Castellanos, who is a Republican consultant and founder of Purple Strategies. Meanwhile, what about the migrant crime wave that Trump talks about? Some questions about how that shows up statistically. And then a poll shows that the conventional wisdom on Biden's immigration policy is simply wrong. We will get to that and much more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.